Welcome back to another episode of the MetaMakers podcast. My name is Davis, and I'm here with our guest. Could you please introduce yourself by your first and last name, please?
Hello, everyone. I am Christina Archila.
And Christina, we met last year at Catharsis for the first time. And since then, we've talked about a few of our overlapping interests. One of them is food and sustainable food. And I know you have your own show about cooking, and I'd like you to start by talking about that. What is what's your show about, and what kind of things could people see on your show?
Oh, Davis, thank you so much for asking. My show is part of a movement. The whole movement is called the Veggie Shift. So what I'm trying to propose is that we all need to radically increase the amount of produce, veggies, fruits, especially non-starchy veggies, and the quality. We need to increase the quality of the veggies that we're eating. It needs to be better and organic, because really that's what's going to save us from the health crisis that we're facing today. And the health crisis is due to lifestyle and food. But the thing about plants is that they can reverse both the damages of some lifestyle problems and a lot of, you know, health problems. So in order for them to work, a person needs to consume about 50 to 80% of their diet produce, depending on the problem or depending on where they want to go. And people know this. Their doctors tell them that, and, you know, their dietitians or their nutritionists tell them that. But it's really hard to go figure it out, how to do that, how to really achieve that and be sustainable with your kitchen, not spend all your time cooking, and how to make it tasty.
Yeah.
So I'm a trained chef in the raw food vegan culinary world, and in that world you study vegetables like nobody's business. So I've taken all that knowledge and I'm putting it together to train people and to teach them to really empower them in their kitchen to achieve radiant health fueled by food, by produce. And that's what my show is about. We touch on different subjects every week. It's Friday afternoons. A friend comes and touches on a topic. We have a topic. We talk. It's a free form video, always with purpose.
Yeah.
And it's meant to make everyone fall in love with veggies, go want to make some produce recipes.
Yeah, I love it. The second to last episode that you put out is called Sexy Veggies or something along the lines of that. And I mean, it's fun. It's cool. I mean, that's really what we're doing as well, is making a sustainable lifestyle appealing by making it fun and easy and cool. So I really like how you do that with the concept of eating healthy, because you're right, everybody hears it from their doctor and their dietitian, and we all know we should be eating more vegetables. Like, if you ask somebody, I don't know about you, but like a lot of my friends know that they should be eating healthier, but sometimes those options aren't available. So how do you make it easy for people, or what would you say to the person that wants to eat healthier but doesn't know the means to get there and achieve good health?
So obviously, what we need to create is a connection with food. Because once we can connect with food a little bit more, the story behind it, the nutrient behind it, something about it, whether it's growing or sprouting, that connection is so powerful. The ripple effects of that connection trigger into you wanting to use better ingredients or better salts or better oils. So I believe in education. My means is to educate people. I do a lot of education for free, but I do a lot of guided education and I do a lot of coaching. Because people are on different paths and people need different types of assistance.
Right.
A little bit of education helps everyone, but people that really need to fight and battle something hard also need accountability. And that's where I come in and give them education and accountability to hold up to what we're learning, to keep it up, to keep motivated. And it's been working really good for a couple of us.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the best ways to get connected is just by growing something. Right. And like, not everybody has a big backyard where we can grow things, but even just like a little plant in your room, I mean, it adds oxygen to the room. Like, scientifically speaking, it, you know, messes with the ions in the air. but also taking care of something is one of the best ways to become connected to it. And so, like, what are some of your favorite things to grow at your house?
Oh, kitchen. Well, My whole front yard has been transformed into a garden because my boyfriend is a soil scientist, so we've been working in the gardens quite a bit.
That's awesome.
So I have the best front garden. I grow tons of food, tons of medicinals,
wow,
and tons of edible flowers. My favorite thing is to have lots of flowers in my food and in my photography and stuff. But my favorite thing to grow, I like to sprout things just for health purposes. So I know the difference between eating regular chickpeas and sprouted chickpeas, for example. It doesn't hurt my belly. It's a lot healthier.
Okay.
So I love sprouting beans and legumes. And I do a lot of videos about how I sprout alfalfa and just every single seed possible, because there's nothing more special than the young nutrients in a plant. And that's what's so powerful about eating sprouts and young microgreens. It's like young nutrition that's so pure, so hearty, because it's got like that growth energy.
Yeah.
That hasn't been, you know.
Right. I mean, if you think about a seed, it's crazy. It's got all every piece of information for that plant to live its entire life. And it's packed full of protein and good minerals and stuff like that to help it grow.
It's all the life force that's just coming out, forming life out of a dormant piece. So it's just so nutritious. Every radical health institute, you know, and natural health institute in America believes in sprouts like nobody's business. And it's such an easy thing to do at home. It's so silly, you know, like you can do it with no equipment or you can do it with a $20 piece of equipment.
All right, give us the 30-second lowdown for those of people that are listening that want to make sprouts.
Okay, so the first thing you do is you soak your nuts or your legumes or your seeds. Actually, not nuts, sorry. Seeds or legumes. You soak them. And you want to be relative to the size of the piece. If it's a little tiny piece of alfalfa, you know, you can get away with a 4-hour soak. If it's a big bean, let's say, for example, a chickpea, then you want to do a soak overnight. So you can calculate your soak. And then you're going to rinse and drain. So you want to put them on a colander, or you want to put them on a sprouter. Or a colander works just fine. And then that colander, you kind of lay it on top of a bowl so it sits above the bowl and the water drains down. And what you're going to do is you're going to rinse them morning and, you know, kind of strain them, put them on the bowl, cover it with a towel, and then do the same at night. And in 2 or 3 days, you're going to have tails on all those seeds or whatever you're growing. And those tails would be perfect to eat when the tail is about 2 to 3 times the size of the seed.
Okay.
And that's when they're at their prime and they're delicious, depending on the seed.
Yeah.
So you become very visual with these. You start growing them. They start bringing life to your kitchen and to your meals. It's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we've done sprouting workshops at our events before.
Oh,
and
beautiful.
Like, I really love it. I used to eat bean sprouts when I was little, when I used to ask my mom to like take one from the grocery store and feed me. But growing up, in a lot of my friends didn't eat vegetables, and it was almost like the cool thing to do when I was growing up was like not eat vegetables and like eat as much meat as possible and eat chips and drink soda because it's cool and like we have the money and check out this awesome brand. So I stopped eating vegetables. I like really just didn't want to eat them. And then it wasn't until my freshman year in college that a significant, really significant person in my life, we started talking about plants and eating vegetarian and the health aspects, the emotional aspects for the animals and the sustainable aspects for the earth and all of these different things. And then we both started eating vegetarian just because we thought the other person was vegetarian. So it really helped doing it with other people and in community. And I really appreciate that you're sharing this information in a fun way so that people can feel connected with it and start doing it for themselves. So.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about your experience. You've studied culinary arts, and you even were the art director for Discovery Channel. Is that correct?
Yeah.
That's really awesome. So how did you get involved with that, and like what made your shift towards food?
So I graduated college in an era where you would get job offers basically before you graduated. And I connected with the folks that came down from Discovery. You know, it was one of the board of directors from the school. He was a Discovery employee and he was recruiting. And I was ready to move here when I graduated college and work for them. And I did for a while here in Bethesda and later on in Silver Spring. And I was an art director and I worked on a lot of projects and show titles and stuff. Mm. And at some point, I enrolled in grad school and I was working and studying. And I went to film school at American University and I got exhausted by the time I graduated. And I just kind of took a sabbatical. And that sabbatical was a backpacking trip that I was hoping was going to be like a year long, but it took about 3 years to just hop around the world and travel and be myself and take a lot of awesomeness. I made it into this like backpacker economy where $5 a day to $10 a day are enough in certain parts of the world. And you just go with the flow, experiencing and really, really learning a lot. It sounds like a lot of fun, and it is a lot of fun, but it's also a lot of work. You're doing personal work all the time. By the time I got to go to India, I saw like these 75-year-old people, super healthy, super like loaded with energy and like in a bliss. And I'm like, gosh, if I want to keep up this rhythm, I need to do what they're doing. Mm. And they were true hippies, and they taught me all about sprouting and raw foods. And I just connected with them. And I'm like, yeah, if I want to keep it up this way, you got to do it the right way. Otherwise, you know, you can't compete. I see other people that at that age are taking full-on medications and kinds of surgeries left and right. And it's a different story depending on how you treat yourself. So I got into this, and I went to the first course and then to a second class, and then I went to the best raw food culinary school in Mendocino in Northern California. I went to Living Light Culinary Arts Institute. Mm. And then I went to work for this very, you know, fancy vegan chef, Matthew Kenny, and he opened up a school, and I went to work for his school and do a lot of the learning there, a lot of the teaching, a lot of the designing the classes. And Matthew Kenny is the, you know, most amazing vegan chef out there in many, many ways, in the artistic and culinary direction, mm-hmm. and the knowing and learning and teaching. And he's all over the industry, some places that are very big. But I worked for him in very big projects and learned a lot. And then when I moved to Washington, D.C., I couldn't figure out where to place myself because this is more of an activist town. So I went and looked for really a lot of meaning of what's really happening. How do we change this situation, because we have an epidemic, we have a food epidemic, and you just said it, people stop eating vegetables or hardly ever do because it's so convenient to grab everything else that is in a package.
Yeah.
And I myself, like everyone else, do that sometimes, there's no doubt, but I've experienced the other side. I've experienced the side where you just go grocery shopping on the produce aisle first and then barely touch the central aisle so that you can really stay focused. And if you buy a ton of produce and you pack your fridge, you're going to use it. If there's any consciousness in you, you're going to try and get into those drawers and chop things up and do whatever. Mm-hmm. My suggestion is get a cast iron pan because everything tastes good when it's made in a cast iron pan.
Definitely.
And olive oil and salt. We're not talking much.
Yeah.
But I got into this, you know, in D.C., and now I'm doing information, creating community, and I'm coaching people, and I'm teaching culinary classes, and I'm really helping people that need a little bit of guidance with food. And you'd be amazed how many of us have so many layers of communication with food that we need to heal, and we need to like really centralize and really like connect and make really sustainable.
Yeah, it sounds like you really resonate with that passion, that mission. Like, what keeps driving you, or what drives you to keep on doing what you're doing? Other than the fact that you like it, I mean, there's got to be, you know, I guess a better question is, could you share a story of a time that like sticks out to you as driving your why?
Yeah, well, this is quite personal, and at some point I'm gonna have to say it in public, but both my mom and my best friend are the same age. They're in their 80s. You know, between 80 and maybe my mom's a bit older, like a year or two older. So they're like in their mid 80s kind of thing. And both of them are so dynamic and so beautiful and so together in their womanhood and in their motherhood and in their family guidance and everything. My mom's a tremendous artist and a painter. Mm-hmm. And my friend Mimi is a vegan chef and writer. She used to be the stand-in for, oh gosh, someone really famous in Hollywood. Who was she? I'll remember in a second, but it was someone super famous. So she was a fabulous woman in LA. She's sat alive. She has many kids, many lives, all these things. But she's a vegan. And that woman is in her body right now. She has every part of her body working for her. She has all her dynamic, you know, moving around this and that. I can't say the same for my mom, even though my mom has a great lifestyle. She cannot walk the distance. She cannot move the stairs. She has a lot of limitations. Mm-hmm. And I see the difference that food has made in these two women that I love and adore, and it breaks my heart mm-hmm. to see that something so simple is out there for all of us to tap into to change a story, no matter what the story is. And sometimes it's mental health. It doesn't always have to be something that physical. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a big problem. Sometimes it's a depression. There's so many things that can be altered with really good food. And I wish I could have helped my mom a bit more, but she prefers other things, and that's perfectly fine too. But I see that, and I know what I want everyone. I want everyone to see that option, and I want to help promote that option so that many of us can grab onto it.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I really do. It's it's an interesting world we live in where sometimes it's easier to take the shortcuts, but it's more enriching to take the longer path. Right? And in such a busy world, not a lot of us have patience.
That is the problem. It takes a little bit of planning to do it.
Where are the fast food vegan places that are open late night? I mean,
yeah, we need to promote those businesses. We need to help those businesses. We need to really get them out there. And sometimes, you know, Davis, it doesn't even have to be vegan. It has to be good quality food, because right. It's okay to have dairy or meat or whatever out there, as long as there's veggies to top it off and things, not just deep fried sides and things like that. But just like, let's bring on the veggies, everyone. You know, an example is like Amsterdam falafel. We're all grabbing whatever you're grabbing there of bread and falafel, but your toppings are all fresh veggies, and there's life in that food.
Yeah.
We need more of that.
Definitely.
We need more of that.
Definitely. Yeah, I apologize for saying vegan. Plus, it's like vegan so hard. I wouldn't even call myself a vegan for a number of reasons. I mean, but like sometimes I'll get some bread, or I'll be gifted like something that has like a tiny bit of milk in it, and I'm really hungry, and you know, and I have nothing else to eat, and I'll eat it.
So it's
hard, but like where we spend our money, I do my best to make sure that I'm investing in food that's investing in me as much as possible. So I will spend the extra dollar for like organic or like the plant-based or like the Impossible Burger instead of whatever, or like the avocado instead of cheese, or maybe they have, you know, vegan cheese or something. But I think that that's actually an investment in my life, so that later on I'll have to spend less money on like hospital bills. And so it's an investment. So it's actually cheaper overall. You know, or better value, I should say.
Yeah, there's this really cool project with this insurance company. And what they're doing is, instead of subsidizing medication, their project is to subsidize produce.
What?
So it's preventive rather than... Yeah, so I read about it in an article in the Newsweek.
This is the first I'm hearing of this.
And I posted it on Facebook. It's a project, and the curve, even though it's a steep curve, it's an inverse curve. Like, at first, it seems more expensive to give people some money for their produce bill. But then, with health, it just completely curves back down.
Wow.
So it's a really cool project. I think things like that are really what we're going to need.
Maybe we could drop the link.
I have it on my Facebook page, okay, so cool. I'll put it. Yeah.
Nice.
Yes, we will.
I love doing podcasts because every person we bring on has so much value to add. And it's like we all get smarter, and everyone listening to this gets smarter and gains resources and knowledge. And like, then we'll have opportunity to connect with you and vice versa. It's just like, just value creation. I love it. So thank you. Like, you just got me excited. I've never heard of that.
Absolutely. Isn't that cool? I get stoked about those things too.
All right. Random question. If you could be any fruit, what fruit would you be and why?
Oh my God. I would definitely be a lychee, because I would be wearing that cute little red shell. I would be juicy. I'd be sweet. I'd be white. White's one of my favorite colors to party on.
You had an answer ready for that.
Oh yeah. I'm a fruitaholic, so I'm very close to fruits. I could tell you like my 10 top fruits. What lychee, fresh lychee.
That's awesome. I'm glad you have that perspective. And to talk about your video, the one called Sexy Veggies, like, what turns you on to, you said you're a fruitaholic, like, what turns you on about fruit?
Oh, it all starts with the texture. I believe when you use the five senses to communicate with food, you are definitely having a deep relationship. So, you know, the tactile part, just selecting your produce, so different than selecting a bag of cheese or something. I'm not condemning cheese or anything, but I'm saying, you know, when you're touching that mango or those bananas that you're going to take home, there's some tactile moments that you're having that are pretty precious. There's something happening in your body right there. And then, you know, you're smelling and seeing how fresh or how ripe this is with the smell. And then obviously your eyes are compromised. And then you're not going to have anything to listen to much right then and there, but maybe you're putting it in the bag. Maybe you're just, you know, something, it drops, it rolls, or it comes in a case. And then, you know, last but not least, you have that taste moment. It's like fruit and freaking five senses connection.
And then the sound happens after, like, or you hear it like bite, something like that.
Yeah, it's all nature's sugar.
Yeah, yeah. Also, sugar is another interesting thing, because doesn't sugar like cause inflammation? And
how are
fruit sugars different from cane sugar or like some type of processed sugar?
Exactly. Let's call those processed sugars. So in the processing of sugar, they're stripping the sugar flavors from the fiber. So when that hits the body doesn't have fiber to process, and that spikes your insulin. That like confuses your body to have just the sugars but not the fiber. Whereas if you're eating fruit, for example, an apple, you're eating all of the apple's sugars with the fiber. So the difference between eating a fresh pressed apple juice and an apple with all the fiber in your body is completely two different things on the sugar scale.
Okay.
The one without the fiber will spike the hell out of you, and the one with the fiber will take its time to digest, and then it'll be like synchronized and come all together.
Okay, but are the sugars different?
Oh, absolutely. Well, a processed sugar is always going to be something that's, you know, absolutely like cooked and, you know, pulverized and heat process in some way. Whereas the fruit is just like a live enzyme sugar. And, you know, there could be polysaccharides or something along those lines that still have vitamins and other things attached.
Because I know my dad was eating a lot of smoothies, right? And he was eating smoothies like every day and like a lot of fruit in them. And then he thought, you know, he heard that eating a lot of sugar causes basically fat. And so he stopped drinking smoothies because he's like, hey, I heard sugar is a lot of too much sugar is bad. And I was like, well, I thought fruit sugar is different than like putting like teaspoon of, you know, table sugar or something, or it's, like brown sugar.
It's completely different. And there are lists with different GI indexes, which is what they measure sugar in, you know, like, or they measure it in several ways, but this is just one of them. And there are lists. So, for example, there are very low sugar fruits. For example, kiwis are very low sugar, and strawberries and blueberries. So there are fruits that don't have a lot of sugar. So you could probably...
They're still sweet.
They're very sweet, but they don't affect your blood sugar that way. So they don't spike your numbers. They're very harmonious with the body. If you are, you know, a diabetic, you probably should stay away from them on a regular basis and have them only as a treat here and there and in small quantities, obviously. But people like Medical Medium, who is one of the people that I really learned from and learn a lot of stuff, he believes that all of us can handle and tolerate some form of sugar if we clean up the rest of the mess. So it depends on the rest of the mess, you know, how much fruit sugar you can have or not. And what quality of fruit you're having. Definitely not all fruits are equal. So, you know, like dried fruit, extremely high in sugar. Your body's going to process that and it's going to collapse and stuff with the amount of sugar. But still a healthy snack for a healthy person, and combined with nuts, it gets a different vibe. Yeah. But if you're sugar sensitive, you're probably going to have to stick to like the berries and the apricots and the kiwis.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, different, still better than eating Starburst.
Hell yeah. Heck yeah. You're getting a lot of nutrients with fresh fruit. You're getting enzymes and vitamins and minerals.
So what are some of your favorite easy snacks?
So my easy snacks, because fruit and vegetables are very, very, very self-contained. So if I give you this,
an apple.
I give you a problem in the sense, a nice organic apple here, you know it's organic because on the label it starts with a 9
right.
or a 5, or a 5 is organic, yeah, and then a 4 is conventional, right? Mm-hmm. I believe something like that.
Starts the 3 and 4 is
conventional. Are conventional, and then 5 and 9 are organic?
I think 8.
Okay.
I don't know. I know 9. It's I don't know about 5 or 8.
It's important to look.
Because
at the end of the day,
oh,
you
there you go.
Have.
Wow.
So what I was going to say, Davis, is in the fruit world.
The apple.
Hold on.
You might have to stand up. I think the apple is too big.
There you go.
Nice. She brought the apple
splitter. I got an apple and I have a nice little OXO apple slicer. And what I wanted to say is that fruits and veggies are amazing, but they're boring. It's not the same to have a nice little slice of apple handed to you than to have a big apple. And when your teeth are tender and the apple's cold and it's like, oh my God, you're just giving me a problem, not a solution. But when I hand you something that's already sliced and, you know, kind of nice.
Right.
So my favorite snack is sliced fruit or something ready to eat. Ready to eat fruit, and by ready to eat, I mean it's like nicely cut, nicely presented. Cheers. Sometimes you have nut butter with it, or spreadable honey, or whipped honey. Uh huh.
It's so sweet.
I know, it's a nice organic apple.
My body is just saying thank you from the depths of my essence.
So ready to eat fruit is my favorite snack. Sometimes you have to add a little bit to it. You have to add a little bit of pizzazz, maybe an herb and some honey.
Herb on fruit.
So, for example, if we had peaches and we were like, oh, my God, it's not peak season. They're just a little bit underripe or whatever. Just slice them up. Then drizzle a little bit of your favorite sweetener. Yes, it's going to be a tiny sweetener. If you have intolerance to sweeteners, you could probably use Lakanto, which is monk fruit, which is very good for people who have intolerance or stevia. I don't like stevia, but that's a good one for people who can't handle sugar. For me, I put a little bit of maple or a little bit of honey. Dash of lemon juice, and then a little bit of mint, and you have all your peaches in there. Leave them just a couple minutes, and they're going to start and just kind of like weep a little bit of their juices, and just kind of like it becomes a dessert. It's like comes to life very easy.
And mint, I mean, super easy to grow in your window. Just go get some seeds. It's or buy one for like $2.
Oh my gosh! Or you take a piece of a plant somewhere because just a little bit of a root, you know.
At least you'll be having mojitos all summer or something like.
Yeah. Yeah. Something along those lines.
Okay, so you talked about like not wanting to condemn, and I don't either. I used to like try to share my knowledge and or my perception of what is good to people in a way that I realized over time was not effective at all. So now I don't tell people what to eat. Now I just do my thing. I share really good food with people if they want to try it. But you know, I don't tell anyone what to eat or anything, but I'm curious about your opinions on eggs because you were talking about seeds and sprouting and how like the beginning of life, it's kind of like a seed is kind of like an egg. In a way. So like, how do you feel about eggs in general? And then you can talk about anything else that might be necessary to cover. Cause I know it's a complicated topic.
So I'm going to be blunt. I personally have always loved eggs, the flavor. I think that eggs are very nutritious and they do great things for me. I feel great when I eat them. Lately, I have been listening to Medical Medium, who says that eggs feed a lot of our pathogens in our body, and that has sunk into my mind, and I have been, like, a little more aware, so I buy them less often, and I eat them on special occasions, like a weekend with friends brunch or something like that. I don't have them every day. And it's just because that's been on my mind, and I'm trying to really push the fruits and veggies to an 80% of my lifestyle, so sometimes I'd rather use that 20 for something else than an egg, and sometimes for an egg. So that's cool. I love them. You know, there's all kinds of eggs. They're all not created equal. You really have to know what kind of egg we're talking about, first of all, right?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
where
it comes
from.
We're at the fern right now in D.C. and looking back in the backyard, and you can see the chickens that they've got in the backyard. And it's cool because you can see them eating grass. They have a name. They're not.
And you're getting one egg per day for.
Well, two eggs a day.
Nice.
And they're fresh and they taste better. They taste different, at least.
Oh, yeah.
So better or worse, I mean, it's up to you. But, I mean, try a home grown, like backyard sunlight receiving chicken egg. You know what I mean? That's, it's just completely different.
I bet. That sounds amazing. I've had those in Colombia, which is where I'm from. So I know how precious this food group is that we're discussing. This is not your average egg. Very clever. How's it handling the chickens?
Well, I actually don't live here.
Okay.
But Sebi and Itai take care, and David and everyone here, like, enjoys taking care of them. I mean, they're fun. They let them out. They run around the yard. They eat insects. When you talk about like a permaculture farm, right? You've got like cats eat the rodents, and the goats trim the grass.
Yeah,
like you don't need to cut your lawn. And then they're also the fertilizer from the poop coming from the goats and the chickens, and then also, you know, the goats are providing milk, and like all these things are working symbiotically, and the chickens eat the insects. So, I think, you know, whatever you eat, it's cool. Just we have to be like thinking about how sustainable it is. And if everybody in the world ate this way, would it be possible? Well, if everybody in the world was hypothetically putting together community farm and like eating local native plants, that's how we've been doing it forever. So yeah, that is sustainable. If everybody in the world was purchasing from a store, then, you know what I mean? It's like it's a big disconnect. But then again, also, it's not reasonable for everybody to do that in this world.
And everybody don't got it. We need people in different areas putting their expertise. It takes work, and some people are just not there. And my advice, or what I see happening, is we need to have balance, and we need some meat eaters, and we need some healthy carb eaters, and we need some processed foods for on the go, and we need some packaged foods, and we need fast foods. But we need the big ones to be a little more responsible, because they have the dominion, and they need to set the standards and the examples, and they've been big boys for a long, long time, and we know the solutions, and they need to step it up.
Yeah.
And that'll trigger everything. If the cream of the crop of fast food and stuff like that starts taking serious responsibility for the food, everyone else has to. And what other chance does anyone else in the food industry have?
So it doesn't look like, you know, well, what it does look like is a company making as much profit as they can, you know, or being the best business they can be in the United States, capitalist society. So how do we help these big companies change? Is it by, you know, I don't know what I'm getting at. I think what I'm trying to say is we can start, you know, for example, the dairy industry. If you look at the shelves, I mean, you can see, everyone can see it at their store. There's less and less milk, cow's milk, I should say, on the shelves, and more almond milk and macadamia nut milk and hemp milk and, you know, soy milk, of course. But we vote with our dollars. And so a lot of people know that it's the bigger ones, the big companies mostly taking up a lot of these resources, using a lot of these resources. But when we start purchasing different things or you know, spending our dollar more wisely than just based on simple supply and demand, these businesses will do their best to stay in business.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the stories behind a lot of these companies that are created by entrepreneurs that are so solid, and then they get bought by Kellogg's, but like Bare Naked Granola, they're two folks that were super integral folks creating an integral product. So Kellogg's buys it, and now it's sold by Kellogg's, and it's in every shelf, and it's a health item. Well, I'll still be okay supporting Kellogg's if they're going to hold their standards with those products that they buy, because it's okay to be bought out by a giant. Thank God they did. Mm-hmm. And I believe that with our dollars, if we demand better foods, you got to give them to us. And they are doing that. Mm-hmm. They are. And we are getting to better places. It is happening. We are moving. We are talking. No more straws. No more styrofoam. What are we eating? Where are these pieces of, you know, greens everywhere? Why do we have salad fast food shops opening left and right? $16 a salad, and people are paying them at lunchtime happily. We want this. We want the options. And, you know, at every single level, I can tell you The awareness for health food has grown, but the statistics for health has gone down. So there's some imbalance in that equation that's pretty serious. And it's all, you know, autoimmune disease that's allocated to lifestyle and health conditions and food and lifestyle. So we got to be really careful with the stress, because the stress is our biggest killer. We got to understand that the planet is a little more toxic than it was before. There's so many heavy metals and stuff all over the place. There's so much cell phone signals and whatever that causes and this and that. Our water is different, everything. So we really need to eat a lot of the foods that remove toxic heavy metals. And these are the dark leafy greens. There's nothing else that compares. So it is important to up our game. It isn't just like, oh, I'll have a little side salad. No, you got to keep your system super stoked to our times. Yep. Our times are demanding better food.
Yeah, I used to hate salad.
I know, me too, at some point in my life. And then I learned something really cool. I would love to tell you something really cool about salads, because that's my biggest push for everyone.
Please do.
Well, I really want people to start loving salads. And I can guarantee you that everyone can make a salad once they know how to make the perfect salad dressing, the perfect vinaigrette or salad dressing. Because that's half the game. You could just have lettuce.
But half. More than half, I think, is dressing.
So I wrote a book on easy, you know, whole food, amazing products. The name of the book is My Top 40 Dressings That Turn Any Veggie Into a Star Dish. And it's 4 chapters. The first chapter is all vinaigrettes, because that's the easiest and the most amazing of all forms of salads. Really cool. Really interesting vinaigrettes. The second chapter is all blended dressings that are vegetable based. Then there's a chapter that has all the nut and seed based, because you know those people that are eating too many vegetables want a hearty dressing, like a cashew dressing or a pumpkin seed dressing.
Oh man, I'm getting hungry.
Yeah, and then the last chapter is for all of those folks that can't have any oil or fat. So it's a completely fat-free, very creative collection of dressings that have other different ingredients that give it the body and the fiber to stand alone without fat. And I want to give this to everyone. And I do ask that you join my website for that book, for that gift. And it's a project I've been writing for a long time and photographing right now. I'm releasing it next week with the full photographs.
Photos look great too.
Thank you so much. Because I want everyone to be inspired to eat a lot more salads, to really feel comfortable with doing these things. Because it's a very easy, it's a precise art to do a vinaigrette. But once you get it, you got this.
Yeah, kale, yeah.
Kale, yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we'll definitely put the links so that people can connect with you. What's the easiest way to connect with you for those that are listening that want to check out your stuff?
Great. Well, my website and my Facebook page, my personal page is my name, Cristina Archila, and it's Cristina in Spanish, so it's Cristina Archila, Archila. And that's also my website.
That's why I didn't introduce you at the beginning, because I felt like I was going to pronounce it wrong.
Thank you for pronouncing it, for letting me introduce myself. And then my website is also ChristinaArchila.com. My Instagram is Raw Food Artist, because I used to be just a raw foodie and a raw food chef. But now since I've expanded, I'm trying to concentrate everything under the veggie shift. So in a couple of months, that's where I'll be. But for now, please look for me at Cristina Archila Facebook.
Yes.
Or on the internet.
And then hopefully we could get you involved in maybe a workshop at our annual event in October called Beauty in the Backyard. It's a 4-day camping and creative arts retreat. We have a lot of music and workshops and games and all sorts of fun stuff. So keep your eye out. I think we should come up with something collaborative soon. And as always, this has been an episode of the MetaMakers podcast. If you want to check out what we're doing online, you can go to our website. It's metacreative.world, M-E-T-T-A, creative.world. Collaborative arts, inspiring sustainability. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.